Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. As you all know, this is the summer of elections. August 23rd is election day in Sarasota County for the school board race. It is also primary day for the county commission races, and thank goodness we actually have more than one person running for county commission. There were times when the incumbent ran unopposed or somebody ran unopposed, but we've got great people stepping up to the plate. One of those people is Lourdes Ramirez, who's with me today. Lourdes has been involved, active in county issues for, gosh, at least two decades, I'd say. Is that right, Lourdes?
That's true. That's true. 20 years.
You've been president of the Siesta Key Association, Neighborhood Association. You've been president of the Council of Neighborhood Associations. You are currently president of the Republicans Women's Club, right, in Sarasota County?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and you have been, had a successful career in the semiconductor industry as an executive sales rep. So, Lourdes Ramirez, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you and I are familiar with each other from the Council of Neighborhood Associations, and I know you've been involved, Lourdes, in issues at the county level. Like I said, you've got a lot of institutional knowledge. We have to talk about affordable housing, and we're going to do that. That, I think, is one of the major issues in Sarasota County. But before we go there, and there are other, you know, planning development issues, but let's start out with our local constitution, which is the Sarasota County Charter. And, you know, one of the dynamics that's changed and has made it easier for a grassroots candidate like you to run is single member districts. So why don't you tell me, why don't you tell the listeners, why are you running? This isn't your first rodeo running for county commission. What is motivating you to run?
As you mentioned, I've been involved in issues involving Sarasota County and Siesta Key for 20 years. And I remember when I first started going to the county commission meetings, I felt heard at that time, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we had champions on the county commission. We may not have agreed with everything they decided on, but the John Thaxton, the Nora Pattersons, they listened to what we had to say. And there were some compromises made. And I felt heard. And I just enjoyed having the ability to see a county commission who cared about the community. And so when they made a decision, they didn't just say, this is what we decided. If they would explain themselves, we're not seeing that now.
No.
We don't feel we are being heard. There could be hours of testimony with, as you know, I did it with the hotels and we're hearing it out east with the development going there. When we spent our Siesta Promenade for on 41 Estate Point, we have lawyers, we have facts, we have information, we provide the county, and they completely ignore us. And I think it's time, and I know I will be the county commissioner who will be there to listen to the people and champion the neighborhoods.
Yeah. So Lourdes, can you give me an example? Because for somebody, let's say somebody's lived here 3, 4, 5 years, and they vote, but they haven't necessarily seen what you're talking about when it comes to just ignoring citizens. Can you give me an example that you think is particularly compelling?
Yes, let me give you an example of how it was and how it is now.
Okay.
In 2007, I discovered as a citizen and president of the Siesta Key Association that the county was issuing permits for duplexes on lots that was only big enough for single family homes. Obviously illegal, against our comprehensive plan. And when we approached the county, their first reaction is, oh, okay, we'll just change the rules to allow it to happen. But we didn't want that. That was increasing the density. We didn't want that. So we went to a lot of public hearings. We brought in lawyers. We brought in the facts. We brought in maps, showed it to the county commission, and they reversed themselves. So, and that it took about a year and a half to convince the county not to change the law to increase density. Well, that's now we're talking about last year, and the county is proposing these mega hotels on a barrier island. We, again, spent hours and tons of information, tons of facts, legal facts with lawyers, and they didn't even discuss the merits of what we proposed as citizens. They didn't need, they totally ignored it. They talked more about what restaurants they went on the key than they talked about the possibility that they may be violating the comprehensive plan. So that's the difference.
Just to clarify, this is about the hotel issue?
Yes. So I see a difference for what how it was back then when we presented information before the county commission and they listened. Mm-hmm. To now, they didn't even discuss the information we provided them from ourselves and our lawyers when they made a decision. And it's really it's concerning for us to see. So I decided I wanted to step in and run for county commission to be that person, to be the person to listen to what the citizens had to say and give them credibility, because I don't think we're being listened to as citizens.
Do you think that... when it comes to, because there, you know, I would say there's three major responsibilities of government that at the local level, it's really about your local government. One is public safety, you know, your police, right? Mm-hmm. The other is land use, how we're going to organize ourselves and develop as a community and the infrastructure decisions that go along with that. It's a huge responsibility. And then the third is education. And really the county commission, their primary responsibility of those three is development. You know, they may have some influence with the others, but it's really development. So when you see this lack of even a voice happening at the county commission, giving a platform for valid citizen concerns, I mean, these are real legal issues. How did it change? Because Nora Patterson and John Thaxton didn't always have the majority. And yet, is it true that, you know, I think just having people on that commission that are competent and able to present, right, that the valid legal concerns can actually lead to some change, even if you're not in the majority. Do you agree with that? Or have you seen that?
I do.
Okay.
I haven't seen it lately. Yeah.
There's nobody there that does it lately.
Not very few.
Yeah.
Not one.
I think Nancy Dietert has the most open perspective when it comes to some of these issues, but
she does, although she doesn't go into detail. You know, when she talked about the hotel issue, she didn't mention the words, and I'm paraphrasing, we better get it correct here or we'll wind up having to correct it in court. And that was her statement. She didn't go into details like we normally hear from like Nora Patterson and John Thaxton. They would talk about in detail. And I think that's really important. Even if you're in the minority, mm-hmm. something has been said for the record to show that the county commission has at least looked over the facts and discussed it. Oh, and if you feel like there's a problem, say it for the record instead of hiding behind
that's what I was really getting at, because these meetings regarding land use, they are actually part of a legal record that if it's going to be challenged, you know, having things laid out in the meeting is important. You've taken this step because people on Siesta Key were really concerned. Siesta Key, the traffic going on and off the key, the changes we've seen over the past 20 years, just in the vibe, the nature of Siesta Key, it's become more of a party place. It used to be more low-key, no pun intended, but it was more low-key. It was more family-oriented. That's changed. And when it came to this hotel issue, I think it was one of the most potent rallying points for Siesta Key in a long time. you're going to court over this. Can you tell us a bit about that, where that stands? Because essentially it's called, you know, it was referred to as mega hotels, and you don't want to have mega hotels. So tell us what the mega hotel is and what the legal challenge is about.
And I do want to point out that I've heard from people in all parts of Sarasota County who believe that the county has violated the comprehensive plan or the zoning code, and they've been ignored. This is like icing on the cake. This is just the last straw that broke the camel's back, I should say. And when it came to this particular issue, we have a comprehensive plan that says on the Barrier Islands, for public safety reasons, you know, hurricane evacuation, disaster mitigation, you know, having emergency vehicles because we don't have a hospital on Siesta Key. All that's really something that should be considered when you're developing on the key. And since 1979, there's been concern by county commissioners in the past of putting too many homes on a barrier island. Mm-hmm. And so so we have a limit of what can be done in the number of units. And for hotels, it was 26 units per acre without a kitchen. And what was adopted by the county commission in last October was 170 units on less than an acre.
Wow.
A lot.
So that's, and it's like seven times.
It's 50% more than was normally allowed on a piece of property.
550%.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's a huge change.
And what was really more horrible is the fact that the zoning code that they changed would affect all commercial districts on Siesta Key. So every lot can get 170 units per acre, or less than an acre in this case. They can get unlimited because there's now no maximum. Wow. When it used to be a maximum. So that's the problem. And they're not even considering the fact that we are a barrier island with only two ways to get off the island, right? This North Bridge and the South Bridge. And you're adding hundreds and hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And that's a public safety issue.
Yeah, it surely is. So you are litigating against that. And I think that's been something people have noted about your activism, is that, you know, you do go the extra step to hold government accountable. Lourdes, can you share with me, because I know I live in the city and the beach that is closest to me is Lido. And Lido Key has been really, and St. Armand's has been really hit by these hotel houses. And so for those who may not be familiar, it's not just the beach areas. Actually, we're seeing hotel houses in our neighborhoods. You know, the lure of being an Airbnb or this VRBO where you buy a house and then you change it so it has 10 bedrooms and one big kitchen and great room and, I don't know, four or five bathrooms. This is happening, and it's changing the nature of our neighborhoods. You're basically living next to a small boutique hotel. Can you tell me what your take is on that, how that's evolved, and what your stance would be if you're elected?
I find a lot of these hotel houses are getting more and more to be party houses, as you mentioned. We're not getting kind of tourists. We used to get, I agree with you when you said it used to be families, it used to be snowbirds, it used to be retirees. And now we're getting bigger groups of people who are just destructive. And we're seeing that a lot on all neighborhoods. The closest you are to the key and on the keys, you're seeing a lot of these hotel houses, and they're turning into be a problem. Parking, the garbage being thrown out, it's just an issue. And I believe there's got to be a way for code enforcement to come down hard. If a particular property is supposed to have one unit, why is it having 10 different people, families living there? That seems to be illegal. And I think we have to really clamp down on it. We need more code enforcement officers. Last I checked, they only had 7 for the entire county. I'm not sure how many they have for the city of Sarasota, but I think they need dedicated code enforcement just to deal with the rentals themselves, much less things like garbage being left out too long. We really need to start, because it's a quality of life issue, it's a public safety issue again, because we don't know who's renting next door. And it gets me concerned because, you know, if they're making a lot of noise, I don't want to go over there and confront them, right? Because I'm having problems with illegal rentals right next door.
Oh, really?
And you know, you don't want to confront them because you don't know how people are going to be nowadays. You really don't.
Right. People are on edge.
Yeah. You know, and you hate to call the law enforcement because, you know, there are better things to do, but code enforcement works 9 to 5, which is wrong. We need them to be working a lot more. Well, at least have more code enforcement to cover different shifts, I should say. Not that
they work at night more. When a lot of this stuff happens, right? Some of those noise violations.
Yeah, and I would be happy, you know, if they had a code enforcement officer, just like they have a nuisance board. That's the kind of thing we need to start addressing. The nuisances of these hotel houses, the nuisances of having people illegally renting individual rooms, or even in some areas where you're only supposed to rent once per every 30 days and they're renting it for less, that has to be addressed. Because by not addressing it, all we're doing is asking for trouble.
Yeah. Is there a role for the county? Because this isn't just happening in Sarasota. And is there, and the hotel house issue is also affecting the stock of housing, right? If people can convert these houses to little hotels within a neighborhood, can you speak about, is there a role for the county to be lobbying at the state level to change the laws? You know, is there a way that we can clamp down on this stuff?
I believe we have to. I think we shouldn't just sit back and let it happen. So as a county, we should be lobbying to make sure that we can clamp down on the rules, just to make sure, you know, sure that our neighborhoods are protected. Yeah. And, you know, I feel a county government should put their citizens and taxpayers as a priority. Not, you know, sometimes they put tourists, people who are only here for a short period of time, here to party, here to vacation. Mm-hmm. And then I feel the county seems to put them as a priority over the citizens, taxpayers here. And I think we need to start acting like a real government.
You know, it seems to me that they are de facto hotels. And so how can they, it's as if there's this giant loophole that they're not required to have the same kind of licensing or compliance as an actual hotel. So they skirt by, or they kind of go through, but the reality is they are, I mean, they really are a hotel. So it just seems to me there ought to be some way to regulate them and perhaps, you know, make it so that it's not an attractive business model, you know? I know people in the neighborhood. I know a friend of mine on Siesta Key, an acquaintance I worked with on the whole Lido Pavilion issue. He left. He and his wife left St. Armand's because it was just, you know, their quality of life just went down the tubes because the hotel house was next door. So I know that's a very potent issue for people in District 2. Now, let me go. I said we would talk about the Charter Review Board. Yes. And what's going on. Single member districts, right? That made it really, it was a game changer. We have had one single member district election for county commission. And Mike Hutchinson was a grassroots candidate and you were his campaign manager. He challenged Mike Moran, who was the developer candidate. And he came really close, didn't he? I mean, it was like, less than 400 votes between the two of them in the primary. Am I right about that?
That's correct. Yes. If he had 190 votes going his way, he would be county commissioner today. And I'm confident we wouldn't be dealing with some of the problems that we're seeing.
Yeah. So it's a process, right? For people to understand. And let's face it, the money still is a factor, right? If you're a candidate with a big war chest, it's always going to help. But here we are, last March, the county commission had put an amendment on the ballot to undo single member districts, and single member districts was upheld. But what we're dealing with now is the county commission has put two amendments. They're moving forward with two amendments. Actually, they started with the Charter Review Board. And these amendments are designed to make it harder for the citizens to amend the county charter, as citizens did with single member districts. So let me just, I'm going to share some facts about this and how it began. In October 2020, the Charter Review Board, and that's an elected board, they review the charter, and there's three ways in Sarasota County you can have a charter amendment. Citizens can gather signatures and put it up to a vote, always has to be put up to a vote. The county commission can initiate a charter amendment, and the Charter Review Board can. So this was initiated during the height of the pandemic, or you know, COVID, in October 2020. A hearing was held about these two amendments. A lot of people didn't even know this hearing was going to happen. And then just recently, in July, the county commission voted unanimously to move these two amendments along. And these are the changes they want to make. Instead of having 10% of signatures of registered voters, right now that's the standard to have a county amendment put on the ballot. They want the 10% to be divvied up per district. So you have to have 10% from each of the five districts, which is just, you know, an administrative hurdle. Is it really necessary? I don't think so. I think it's just designed to trip up the citizens. It has to be legally reviewed, the amendment, prior to petitioning. But the person that's going to legally review it is the county attorney. And the county attorney works for the county commission. The county attorney does not work for the citizens. And there has to be a fiscal impact statement documenting how, you know, whatever the impact of the amendment, proposed amendment would be, which I think is a minefield, because how do you determine the parameters of that impact statement, and who gets to decide if it meets those parameters? It just doesn't seem, it just seems to be another booby trap. And also, the proposed amendment can't conflict with the Florida Constitution, state law, or the county charter. But if you're amending the county charter, by definition, it would conflict. So what's your take on all of this? I've seen what's gone on with these amendments for a while. What do you think?
I was disgusted when I heard about that. It's obvious an obstacle to getting citizens not to participate in the process. Yeah. Because they're not putting those rules on themselves, right? Where's their fiscal impact on this particular proposed amendment? Mm-hmm. I also noticed they don't put fiscal impacts on developers when they propose something big that changes the comp plan. And if they did, we will know that it's a money loser for the taxpayers, right?
You know, usually the fiscal impact is we're paying a bigger bill, right?
We're paying for development. And mm-hmm. So I noticed how skewed it is. But it just shows how the county commission, the current county commissioners, have a disdain for citizens. They're obviously showing how much they do not like citizen input. It's bad enough we see that in land use issues. Now we're seeing that just in normal government processes. Our fundamental right to petition the government for change, you know, they're taking that away from us because they just don't like, you know, they think they're the king and queens and they don't like the citizens to have any input. So I'm working already on informing people about it. I don't know what the language says, because, you know, they could put double negatives and what is a yes should be a no. So I tell them I'm ready to tell them how to vote on that. But I think
they're
kind of famous
for that, for putting in really confusing ballot language.
But it's a nonpartisan, or I should say bipartisan, concern. It should be Republicans and Democrats fighting this. because this is our government, trying to do something against the citizens, and they're taking away our freedom to do change and to propose change to our governing document. So I think we should fight it really head on.
Yeah, I find it kind of jaw-dropping because, you know, the one word I would use to describe that attitude, that disdain, that really, I would say, contempt for citizens, there's a relentless character to it, you know? There's just this relentless disregard. And, you know, essentially, we have a form of oligarchy, I'd say, in Sarasota County, in that you typically get an anointed candidate who is bankrolled by a handful of people. It's you know, Pat Neal, Rex Jensen, Carlos Baruff, Randy Benderson. It's just clear, you know, that they put a lot of money into these races, and they get quite a return. You know, if somebody's picking up your infrastructure bill, or if you buy rural land that's zoned with one house for 160 acres for farmland, or one house for every 5 to 10 acres, but you get a commission friendly to you who is going to rezone it for 5 houses an acre, my God, just that decision, your land is worth so much more money. Used to be, though, developers had to actually pay the infrastructure costs. If you get a commission that will mitigate those costs or just pay them for you, this is how fortunes are made, you know, in Florida. So it's been a real education for me to see how this, I hate to call it a game because it really impacts all of us. It's not a game, but to some people it is, and that's how they do. So with that set up, I'd like to talk about the Keep the Country Country. I know this isn't your district that you're running for, but we're seeing on the 21st, there's a neighborhood workshop meeting, and it's regarding a huge increase in density between University Boulevard and Fruitvale Road. People there are already inundated with traffic. What's your quick description of that? We need to go to a break, and then we'll come back to the issue. But tell me, what do you think of what's going on there, Lourdes?
Again, I think it does impact the entire county, because not only are we paying for that infrastructure, and while they're ignoring our roads, they're putting all these new roads for developers out there. Mm-hmm. I also believe that those people will also clog our roads, because they want to go to the beach, or they want to, we have the amenities right. Theater and stuff. So I'm concerned that adding so much density out there would impact us in many ways. Besides the fact that we need places where the water to be drained into, and if you're going to pave from one end of Sarasota County to another, the water is just going to flood some of the more coastal areas as well. So we've got a lot of negatives for allowing so much more density out there.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, my guest is Lourdes Ramirez. She is running for the Sarasota County Commission District 2. You are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. July 25th, Monday, July 25th, is the voter registration deadline. For the August 23rd election. So everybody get to the internet. If you're already registered, you can register online. You can check your voter registration. You can go to votemanatee.com or sarasotavotes.com to make sure your registration is up to date, to make sure your party is correct, to find out where your precinct is located. And if you're not registered, you have until Monday to do it. So either get online or go down to your supervisor of elections office. It's easy to do. Bring a photo ID and we need you voting in this election. Early voting starts August 13th, and election day is August 23rd. So, Lourdes, tell me about, I want to go back a little bit in the history of Sarasota County so people understand these kind of mega housing developments, subdivisions that the folks with Keep the Country Country, that was Mike Hutchinson, right? And yes, these are the folks that live in Myakka, and they have a rural quality of life. They are farmers. They have ranches. Maybe they keep horses. And it says in our comprehensive plan that Sarasota County is to offer all these different lifestyles, right? That we're not going to be just this suburban subdivision county, but we're going to have rural areas, urban areas. So we have different lifestyles. The Sarasota 2050 plan was supposed to protect us, and it was an award-winning plan. And it had a fiscal neutrality element, which if you're a fiscal conservative, that really matters. Tell us what happened there, just so people understand what's gone on in Sarasota.
So yes, with the 2050 plan, there was an idea, which is a good idea, to just concentrate if you wanted more density, because we really were trying to keep the urban area within the urban service boundary, because that's where government services were, the sewer, the water, the roads. But if you wanted to build out east of I-75, you can concentrate all the housing in a village or a little hamlet, and then you pay for all the roads and infrastructure needed for that, but no more than that. And the density increases were huge. Now they're proposing, and it's around that, it's supposed to be green space. And over the years, the developers kept chipping away at that. You know, they chipped away of what fiscally neutral means, used to cover the roads, the sewer, the water hookups. Then I think they took some roads out and say, okay, even if we paid for the roads, you can still be considered fiscally neutral. I like how the government likes to rephrase or redefine somewhat some of these words are. Yeah. Then they started to chip away at the green space, and they took it to a point that it went from an award-winning plan to urban sprawl. And we're on the hook for all of that. And so they still had these villages, even though they took a lot of the green space and they moved the commercial from the center to the edge. We're paying for the roads. Now they want to put yet more villages out there, and they're calling it a transition zone, but all they're basically doing is increasing the density. So we will have complete urban sprawl throughout the eastern part of Sarasota County.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always describe it to people, if you look at a European city, and it's interesting because my son is living in Amsterdam, and I recently visited him. And the term the transect refers to the heart of the city going out to the country and what's going on in the transect. You know, you have this transition from the urban to the rural. And European cities, because they were developed before cars, have a really well-defined transect, because the city people needed the farms to be able to be close by and provide the food. We need healthy food, local food, and meat and dairy, all of that. So you can see in European cities how they do have these little villages, right? And then around them is the rural space, the farming space. And so when you're saying the density increases were really large, the whole idea was we're going to let these villages proliferate or be prosperous, you know, have a lot of density, but around them is going to be the open space. I mean, that was like the brilliance of the plan. But my take on it was, well, you know, Randy Benderson builds strip malls or malls, and that's not what he's used to doing. Pat Neal builds subdivisions. Carlos Baruz, he builds subdivisions. So that wasn't a development model that they were used to. It wasn't a business model they were comfortable with. They're comfortable with sprawl, right? And it was, and the other piece with that model is that when you cluster density like that, the idea of fiscal neutrality was that the development by itself would generate enough value taxes to pay for the infrastructure. One of the really key things to understand is Sarasota County was the site of a really groundbreaking study that's been replicated by a guy named Joe Minicozzi. He's with Urban 3. I've had him on the show. He's one of the most, you know, influential people in urban planning in the country. And what he discovered was that in Sarasota County, a single family home takes nearly 80 years to pay off its infrastructure costs, which means it never does, because it's not the value of the home and the tax revenue it's generating doesn't cover its infrastructure cost. The urban development does, because it's clustered, it's very land efficient. And the rural development does, because it's spread out and its costs aren't as high. But that middle ground with the sprawl development is actually insolvent over time. It won't generate enough value. And that to me is like, we are so bad at the long term, you know, with our county government in seeing the long term big picture. How do you think? Do you think that's changing at all? Do you think people are being more aware of the risks, particularly with the environment and infrastructure, like our water quality? What's your take on that?
I think people are being aware because they're starting to see that even in their backyards, whether it is out east or somewhere in the Nokomis Osprey area, the county is just approving development left, right, and sideways. And so it's affecting their backyards. It's affecting their traffic, but it's also affecting some people are seeing more and more flooding in their areas as more pavement is going in and there's no place for the water to go except to adjoining lots. So they're being affected personally for a lot of reasons. And they probably from that see the bigger picture, like, okay, so what is going on? Are we really doing what's right for Sarasota County? So when you hear that the citizen survey says that overdevelopment is a big problem, is because I believe more and more people are recognizing that the county is just not making the right decisions.
Mm-hmm. So as you're going out and talking with voters, is there a growing awareness of the special interests that are at work here? Because I think maybe 10, 15 years ago, not so much. Is it different now?
Oh, definitely. I think people, as more and more people get frustrated with the county's decisions, and even if they don't live in an area, I saw a lot of people very upset with Siesta Promenade because they know the Stickney Point.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to make sure people know what you're talking about.
Siesta Promenade is Stickney Point and US 41, the Benderson Project there.
Which is the south bridge of Siesta Key. So we're talking about, there's only two ways to get on and off the island. And that's one of them, the south bridge. So yeah, so go ahead. The Siesta Promenade.
So even if you're not going on Siesta Key, if you're going up north on 41, you get stuck on traffic for everybody who's trying to get on that corner. And so when they hear that there's this enormous project being proposed for that corner, they could see there's a problem with that decision. You know, it's a congested area. It's a very dangerous road to begin with. And now you're adding more. So even if they don't live in an area that's being impacted by these high density and high intensity projects, they see what a problem it's going to be. Since so many of these projects are being put forth and so many of these projects are being rubber stamped by the county commission, I believe that the everyday person, voter, citizen now knows it's so important to get involved in local elections, to pay attention to who your candidate is. And I believe that's why on March 8th, when the county decided they wanted to, the county commissioners did not want single member districts and they wanted to go countywide. Mm. And a lot of money was spent to try to undo what the citizens put in. I think the people, by voting the way they did, that they wanted to keep single member district, was a clear message to the county commissioners. We know what you're doing. We're paying attention. And we're going to now vote exactly to protect us and not just because you say so.
Yeah, you know, that was not a close vote. I'm trying to see if I can pull up those results while we're talking. It was not a close vote. But the ballot language on that question about whether or not to keep single member districts was confusing. And so I know of people who meant to vote to uphold it, who were confused and they voted the other way. I think had the ballot language been actually clear, we would have had, you know, even more people saying, we want to uphold single member districts. I mean, did you hear from anybody like that saying they thought the ballot language was confusing?
Yes, before they voted, you know, when they say, oh, I'm going to vote yes. I'm like, oh, do you want to keep single member districts? I'm like, yes, we do. Oh, no, you have to vote no. And then they get mad. They realize how they were almost deceived by our county commissioners by that language. So I did hear quite a few, not a lot, but there was a few people out there.
Yeah. I find that really disappointing, but the good news is people do seem to be more attuned to the ballot language and being aware. Lourdes, we've got to talk about affordable housing. There's such a problem in Sarasota County. It seems, you know, we're becoming a county of the haves and have-nots. And we're a service economy. We're a tourist economy. It's not the only thing, but it's a huge piece of the economy here in Sarasota. I know I've seen affordable housing added to projects and consistently chipped away. What is your take on the history in Sarasota, and how would you address it as a county commissioner?
That's the one thing I agree that with you, that it's been chipped away. What I know, the state legislature changed the rules so that you cannot mandate affordable housing when you're approving a project, mm-hmm. but you can give incentives. And right. the county has been doing that all this time. So for instance, the Benderson project, UTC Mall, is a big example. Mm-hmm. Not only wanted to build this big, massive mall, and they needed two things. One of them is to use our park as their stormwater facility. And the other part, they wanted to do residential at a high density. So the county said, okay, you needed to build, I think it was as high as 750 affordable units and apartments. Mm-hmm. And what all these developers do is like, they agree to the terms of, okay, we will agree to provide affordable housing if you give us this density bonus or you give us more square footage for commercial. And then they wait 18 months before they come back with tears in their eyes saying how upset they can't afford to provide the affordable housing.
That is always the game.
Always.
Oh, no, this isn't financially viable. We can't do it. Yeah. And I think an important piece for people to understand is what's usually happening is they're buying a cow pasture. Or in the case of Siesta Promenade, it was a mobile home park, okay? So they're buying something, they know what they're buying, and what they're buying doesn't have a lot of density. And a condition of getting the higher density is the promise of affordable housing. And then it disappears. And the game is always, like you say, wah, wah, we're not gonna make any money. That's what they say.
Yeah. Well, I think there should be a clawback clause in every proposal. So if, for instance, somebody says, okay, I want to go from 50 units to 300 units, and we say, okay, but 20% of it has to be affordable, and they said, okay, and then they come back and say, we don't want to do the affordable, well, then you go back to 50.
You know, you go back to square one.
You do, because the incentive includes the affordable housing. You don't get to keep the density bonus if you're not going through with a contract, because you have made a contract with Sarasota County, which is the taxpayers and citizens, that in order to get this incentive, you will be providing affordable housing. And if you're not willing to fulfill that contract, then the contract is null and void. You get go back to the way it was. And that's why I think it's really important. It's something I want to pursue as a county commissioner, because I think we really need to start holding them accountable. If you make that promise, you got to keep it. Otherwise, you don't get the incentives.
Well, it was the whole basis for granting more density, right? It's the whole basis for allowing the land to become more valuable through the ability to build more, is that promise. And they kind of count on the public having amnesia. So we got to take some responsibility too here as a public. But I got to say, you know, there it's a long game. Sometimes it might be 2 or 3 years before they come back and they say, oh my gosh, we can't do it. But I agree with you, Lourdes. I mean, you're getting these building bonuses, these incentives, in exchange for providing something of value to the community, affordable housing. If you're gonna renege on that, forget the rest of it, you know? Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is we have not had commissioners. We've had a few, but they haven't been in the majority. We have not had commissioners who've held the line. They constantly cave, constantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, they just rubber stamp. And again, they seem to, whatever the developer wants is what they get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I were talking, and again, memories fade. But even Benderson Park, people have this idea that that was land that was donated. The park was donated to the county. That is not true, right? Why don't you tell everyone that was public land?
You see, when they said that the park was donated to the county, it was, but not by Benderson. It was by Apex. That property was used to as a little for making I-75. And once they were done, they had this big hole in the ground that became a lake, or, you know, they call it a lake, Cooper Creek Lake. And they, you know, it's a county park.
And so it was always a county park.
Always a county park. We got it in 1970, I think it was. It was a county park. I was a little frustrated this morning. I was reading the newspaper and about the dragon boat races that's happening this weekend.
Okay.
And then they call it Sarasota Bradenton Park. It's not a Bradenton Park. It's a Sarasota County taxpayer-owned park. So why did they add Bradenton in there? Is frustrating to me. I want people to recognize that's our park. And now we're paying a private company who benefits from all of the ticket sales and parking fees from this park. We're paying them to maintain our park.
Yeah.
You know, and then
when
I hear people say, oh, how wonderful it is that Benderson does all of these things like fireworks. We pay for that. Benderson's not paying for that. We pay Benderson to run that park in the millions. Mm-hmm. And I get frustrated because out here on Siesta Key Beach, which is the main economic engine of Sarasota County, you know, they don't maintain it as well. They're giving millions to a private industry to maintain our park. And that frustrates me to no end.
Yeah, I think that is, it's pretty interesting. And I remember the first time everybody wanted that to be a rowing park. It's great that it's a rowing park, you know, that's not the issue, but it was $2 to $3 million when it first in 2009, it was, or 2010 around then, it was floated as $2 to $3 million. Then it became $10 million. It was like still a lot of money, but you know, okay. And then it was $20 million, which still a lot of money, but you know, even at that level, there was a boathouse, there was this whole plan. It became so much more expensive, right? This project creep became so much more expensive. You know, when you look at the value of our beaches and our parks, Lourdes, what do you think has to be the priority moving forward? I mean, how would you approach maintaining them or even adding to our portfolio of recreation facilities, parks?
I believe we need to. One of the things I was concerned about is we have an environmentally sensitive lands program where we tax ourselves that was approved back in, I think, 2000, where we can buy more land. And what they've been doing is taking more and more of that money set aside for land purchases and using it for maintenance. And then the tourist tax dollars, which should be used for maintenance, is being used for other, you know, things like the UTC park. And so I believe there has to be a change of how this money is used, how the tourist tax dollars is used. I think it has to go back to the normal parks, and that way maintaining the Siesta Key and the beaches, including the city parks and beaches. I mean, everyone pays into this fund. We should be able to utilize money for all the parks, and then let the environmentally sensitive land tax and program be what it was, which is to buy more parkland. And as more we're seeing urban sprawl and more we're seeing every inch of Sarasota County being paved, we need more and more of this green space. I like pocket parks. I don't want to eliminate any park. I think they should be expanded and as much as we can, but we should also have little pocket parks throughout the county to bring the green space and also the beauty that we need. I'd rather see more trees than more buildings.
Yeah, we do need that, don't we? Just to get outside and walk around and see your neighbors. Well, we just have a few minutes left. So I want to give you the opportunity to, why should we vote for you? And how do people find out more about your candidacy?
Well, thank you again for allowing me to speak about my position. My website is lourdesramirez.net. I list all my priorities on there, including the fact that I believe we need to really control overdevelopment. When the county commissioners get a development before them, it's not because they need permission. No, most people can build what they need to build under the current code. Is that the county is looking at proposal for more housing, more stuff that the developers want. And I think there's a balance that's required where the county, when the developer wants more and the county commission looks at the neighborhoods and the residents to see what their needs are, and they're not being burdened with the new project. I want to be a county commissioner who listens to the citizens. I will plan to look at everything. As you know, for 20 years, I've been looking at the zoning code and participated throughout. So I feel like I can hit the ground running. I'm not being supported by the developers. Thank God. Unlike my opponent, I won't accept any money from the developers and hotel developers. I really feel that the citizens really need a true champion on the county commission, and that's who I'm going to be.
Okay, Lourdes. Well, I'm going to remind everyone to thank you for being with us. Election day is August 23rd. That is the primary day. You do have a primary challenger, and you are in the Republican primary. There's also Democratic primary. It is our school board election, not a primary for the school board. It's the actual election. So everybody be sure to make your plan to vote on August 23rd. The deadline to register to vote is July 25th, and that is Monday, July 25th. You can go online to look at sarasotavotes.com, votemanatee.com to find out about your voter registration. Is it accurate? You can update your voter registration there. You can find out your new precinct if you have one. Some people's precincts have changed, and you can request a mail-in ballot. So these are all important steps to make sure that you can vote on August 23rd. So again, Lourdes, thank you so much for joining me. I hugely appreciate it. hearing what you have to say. We, of course, ask all the candidates to come, and when they say yes, we feature them. So everybody stay tuned. Be sure to participate. This is your government, and it's important that we all show up. Thanks again, Lourdes, and everybody.
Make it great. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make it a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.